This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
56% of job seekers say the biggest challenge is finding a job that matches their qualifications. This according to an Express Employment Professionals Harris Poll survey. The job search can be lonely, but Express Employment Professionals can be your one connection to finding that job that fits you. Each year, hundreds of thousands of people find work through their local Express office. Find the location nearest you at expresspros.com. No fees for somebody seeking a job. Visit expresspros.com.
You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Congrats to the Vegas Golden Knights in their sixth season of existence. They win the Stanley Cup. Vegas scored 26 goals in the Stanley Cup final. That's the most by any team since the 1991 Pittsburgh Penguins, and matching the 1981 New York Islanders for the most in a five-game series in the final. Stat of the day brought to you by Panini America, the official trading cards of the Dan Patrick Show. They had 9 goals on 31 shots.
That seems high percentage.
It does. It felt like there was more scoring this year, or at least in the playoffs. I don't know the number of goals scored or the average number of goals scored per game. Yes, Todd?
It also felt, at least last night, that Vegas was on a power play for the entire game. There was at least one more player on the ice for them.
They might have been. I like, you know, when we have guys who have injuries and we're like, you know, that guy's bothered by, he tweaked his ankle, or this guy's got a, you know, hurt finger. Matt Tkachuk, he has a broken sternum.
Wow.
And still played. But I almost said his dad, Keith Tkachuk. That's how old I am. I remember when he was playing. But Matthew Tkachuk, he had a broken sternum. He still came back to play. I don't know what injury you can have in hockey where you don't come back, where, you know, your teammates realize, no, he's not going to be able to come back. Now, maybe a concussion, maybe, but they would somehow hide that. You know, the one hockey player who had, but they lost track of how many stitches he had above his eye. I think they stopped at 80, but he still came out and played. You know, if you're a hockey player and you get hurt, you're like, God, my teammate's going to be so disappointed. I mean, I got a broken leg, but it's not that bad.
It's broken anyway. You might as well get a shift in. Can you guys ever remember a final sporting event like Super Bowl, any title event where it felt over earlier? When the end of the second period, fans were taking pictures and like starting to celebrate at the end of the second.
Yeah, like 28-3, the Falcons and the Patriots felt like it was over. I still love when, you know, NFL Films captured some of the Falcons and they were talking trash like the game is over. And then there's one player saying, hey, Tom Brady's out there. Don't start celebrating. Yes, Eaton.
It feels like college football national championships could have where it gets real ugly real early. Alabama Notre Dame comes to mind, where it was like, okay, this is big brothers versus little brothers here. This isn't going to work.
It felt over during the national anthem.
Yeah. All right. The Milwaukee Bucks won an NBA title in their third season. The Arizona Diamondbacks in 2001 with Big Unit and Curt Schilling, they won the World Series in their fourth season. The Marlins were in their fifth season in 1997. So here they are, their fifth season, and they're facing the Cleveland Indians, the Indians at the time, and the Indians lose in dramatic fashion. Edmonton Oilers, fifth season, that was 1983. The Baltimore Ravens, fifth season, they were technically an expansion team, But actually, that was the relocated Browns, though they had to leave their nickname in the history in Cleveland. That one doesn't count. Ravens, not an expansion team. And then the Golden Knights, their sixth season. Who's next? The Guardians? The Lions? Or is it going to be somebody like, you know, the Kraken are going to end up going to Stanley Cup final in their, what, third or fourth season? Yeah, Paul.
I don't think I remember the Cleveland Indians lost that one in 11 innings.
Yeah, dramatic
to the
fashion.
Marlins.
Yes.
Oh, and then the same thing to the Cubs.
Yes, dramatic fashion.
They have to be the one seed for the American sports franchise.
Because they've been close. The Lions haven't been close.
Right. As far as like everyone would get behind their cause.
Would people get behind the Clippers? Would people get behind the Padres? I think they would get behind the Lions. I think, well, maybe they would get behind the Guardians. That'd be one of those, the story would start to build, but the name change hurts that.
Definitely hurts.
Yeah. Man, the long-suffering Guardian family fans.
It's almost like that resets the clock, in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's over.
Yeah.
Like, they're over the Cleveland Indians.
Who else would be up there? Clippers, Guardians, Lions, Paulie?
Here's one, and this is controversial. The Browns are off.
Okay, I was going to say the Browns.
The Browns would have been. They made movies about the Browns stinking draft day and stuff like that, but I really believe that Deshaun Watson has almost put the Browns on hold as a rootable franchise, rootable four franchise.
Yeah.
He is, yeah. His baggage has made them off the board as far as people rooting for them nationally.
Yeah, I could see that. Who else would be in there? But the Browns were great in the 60s. You know, pre-Super Bowl, they were great. And then the Packers became great and then won the first two Super Bowls. So you forget about the Cleveland Browns in the early 60s to mid-60s. And then Green Bay with Vince Lombardi and Bart Starr, they came in, took the first two Super Bowls. It's like the pre-Super Bowl era, Cleveland was a dominant franchise. Yes, Paul.
The Lions seem to have the perfect mix. They got a quarterback who was jettisoned by the Rams, and he's like getting back into football with Jared Goff.
And they love to gamble.
Yep.
Love to gamble. They're like us. They love to gamble.
They've got the right coach for sound bites. The Lions.
Yeah,
he's
very Dan Campbell. Yeah, sure.
Lions are a one seed.
See, I worry about the Lions this year. Last year, I thought they were a playoff team. This year, they have expectations. I think that's the problem sometimes. Florida Panthers, no expectations this year. Had a wonderful year. I don't know if the Golden Knights had expectations. That always had Denver Nuggets, even though they were the one seed. I don't know what I don't know if people thought, okay, the Nuggets. What were the preseason odds on the Nuggets? Were they even in the top? They weren't top five, I don't think, to win the title. I have to believe they were probably seven or eight. Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, you're right on. They were eighth to win the title. Celtics, Warriors, there's favorites to win the NBA preseason. Celtics, Warriors, Bucks, Nets, Clippers, Suns, Sixers, Heat. Heat were above the Nuggets before the season.
Okay.
Just a touch.
And by the way, Nuggets fans, you can take your victory lap and say nobody believed in us. Go ahead. Yeah. You can say it to the media. You can say it to NBA fans. Nobody believed in you, and you have every right to say that if you want to. Factually, correct. Now, I would prefer you didn't, because just take your championship. That's how you shut everybody up. You don't have to tell everybody you didn't believe in it, but if you want to, you can. But you won the title, so you are saying, hey, nobody believed in us, because you would be correct. Also, we've been trying to find a comp for the Joker. Like, who does he play like? Like, who is he in a previous generation? Oh, is he Tim Duncan? Is he, Rex Chapman said he's a 7-foot Steve Nash, which I found very interesting. I have a comparison for Nikola Jokic.
Are we playing Guess That Comp?
Yes. Not a basketball player.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is someone who makes everyone around them better.
No, it's okay. Just I thought of this guy, and I'm thinking he reminds me of Nikola Jokic. He's an athlete. He's big. He's great.
Football player.
He's funny.
The Kelce Bros?
In a unique way. So it might be more. Oh, we got theme music for guess the Joker comp. Okay. Let me see if I can give you hints. Great backstory. Has a brother. Also competes. Yeah, Paulie?
Travis Kelce?
Nope. Not one of the main sports. Not baseball, football, basketball. For some reason, I thought of this guy and I go, he reminds me of Nikola Jokic for some reason.
Not baseball, football, basketball.
Nope. Very, very good.
And has a brother.
Top of his profession.
Top.
Yeah.
One of the Klitschko brothers?
No. No.
Oh, that other guy.
Tyson Fury.
Yeah. Okay.
Got a unique personality, big guy.
Okay.
Good, you know, interesting backstory. Not exactly jacked. You know, he somehow gets it done. Got a sense of humor there. For some reason, that's who the Joker reminds me of, is Tyson Fury.
Okay.
All right.
Bloop.
Yeah.
We'll give you one.
Well, that sounded like a courtesy bloop.
No, it was a, yeah, right. We'll give you, it didn't feel like anybody was stepping up with a bloop, and maybe you wanted one.
Okay. Yeah, if Colin Cowherd came up with that, you'd be like, okay, all right.
That's right. Yeah. You're like, man, you got to hear what he said today.
Yeah.
I always do that. You know that.
Colin always has these analogies. You're like, yeah, it reminds me of Steve Jobs. And I'll be like, what? And he'd be like, yeah. I go, okay. It reminds me of Jeff Bezos's girlfriend. Huh? Yes, Marv.
He'll go back to the real estate market. And audio, and that's how Ben Simmons is the best player in the NBA. Really? That's amazing.
Got to give him credit. You know, those analogies. Yes, Paulie.
I don't know if this is exact player comp. The guy I was thinking about the other day when I was watching The Joker was, and this is old, this is dated, Danny Manning when he was at Kansas. He was the big guy, and he was the focal point, and everything ran through him. Mm. And whenever the game got tight, it was like Danny Manning was not the most selfish player. And if he didn't get knee injuries, he'd been a real nice NBA player.
Yeah.
But when he was at Kansas, he was this big guy, and you're like, he can't jump out of the gym. He didn't look completely jacked, but he just crushed people, Danny Manning, in college.
Yeah.
And the whole offense ran through him.
Danny and the Miracles.
Yeah.
I got a chance to cover that, and I just remember the other teams had more talent. Was that was Pritchard on that and Scooter Barry
Milt
on that?
Milt Newton
was Milt could play.
He had some compression shorts. I remember he wore first guy with compression shorts. Scooter Barry, yeah. Pritchard.
But that team, and you're going, all right, they're somehow going to win this thing. And Danny Manning was the biggest reason why. But Nuggets fans, go ahead. You know, take your victory lap today. Yes, Todd.
How about John Daly as a comp at his peak? Someone that has a unique approach to his sport. To look at him, you wouldn't think there's anything particularly athletic about the guy.
Okay.
Yet he accomplished some shockingly big things during his career.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if Joker has demons and vices like John does. But, yeah, coming out of nowhere when he won the PGA Championship at Crooked Stick. I still look back on that story. And I think he was the eighth alternate. And Nick Price, I think, wasn't able to play in the PGA Championship, and his caddy caddied for John Daly, but John was the eighth alternate and ended up winning PGA Championship. Like, you talk about Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson, those odds aren't anywhere near John Daly, just eighth alternate, just to get in. Yeah, Paulie.
Buster Douglas was scheduled to be in the fight versus Tyson for months in advance.
Yeah.
John Daly found out on, like, Tuesday he was going to be in the PGA.
Yeah. Well, he would have probably been a Monday qualifier.
That's right. Yeah, didn't he drive down and he had to like nowhere to stay or something?
Yeah, I think so.
That might be the all-time. You had no idea the person's name the week before, because Buster Douglas had fought. He was actually somewhat contending.
For yes, it. Yes. That he had a resume.
Yeah.
John, we had no idea. And then you saw that haircut, the way you know he was smoking heaters and he had that sort of mustache there. The way he hit the ball. I did a story on John Daly where I went to see him, and we played golf. And I remember he had an Arkansas Razorback golf ball, but he was hitting the ball over 300 yards. And I said, is that the best feeling ever? And he goes, no. I said, well, what's better than hitting the ball 300 yards? He goes, sex. I said, oh, okay, all right. But to him, it was natural that he would hit the ball that far. And plus, not fun to play with because John had no patience. You'd get ready to, you know, I'd take a swing and he'd be walking right in front of you. And I said, John, I'm not good enough. Don't be doing that. I could hit you. Because I trust you. But, you know, he'd be having Diet Cokes and smoking heaters. All right. What's the poll question we're going with, Seton?
Dan, we put up a poll question based on the Oakland A's right now.
Oh, the new and improved My Oakland A's.
Better protest strategy, a quiet, empty stadium or a full, angry stadium?
The Oakland A's scored in the seventh and eighth inning. They beat Tampa again. They won seven in a row. And they had a reverse protest where fans showed up. Almost 30,000 showed up. And here is the final call last night against the Rays.
And it's swung on and missed. And the A's have won it. On a night of incredible emotion and with the unprecedented nature of the night, the Oakland A's have beaten the Tampa Bay Rays by the final of 2-1.
But on the same day, Vegas approved the financing for a new stadium as the Oakland A's moving to Vegas. How about this? If they make, like the movie Major League, if they make the playoffs, they get to stay. Can we do that? How about a tune-in factor for Major League Baseball with the Oakland A's? You say to the commissioner, hey, commissioner, that's pretty good. It'd be a good story. If the Oakland A's make the postseason, they get to stay. Yeah, Paul.
It's somewhat like soccer, relegation and promotion, but instead of it'd be relocation.
Yeah.
How many games are out? Okay, they're 23 and a half out.
That's not bad. A lot of season left.
Okay.
26 out a week ago.
No chance or low chance?
Of playoffs?
Yeah. Wait, are you going no chance?
Nah, I'm
going
to go low chance.
Okay, yeah.
I'm
gonna go always low chance.
It really hurts having the Rangers in the division.
Never go no chance. Well, as long as the Angels keep playing the Rangers, that's good. Yeah.
The A's have won seven straight.
Yeah.
And
have they gained any ground?
Oh, yeah. They were 26 back a week ago.
Okay.
They're striking distance.
Oh, but they could make that up before the All-Star break.
If they win 24 in a row and the Rangers lose 24 in a row, I think they take the division.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports. Like, a lot. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my live sports and docs in one app, like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. all in one app with one password. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
It is getting that time of the year. It's Miller time. You don't need a watch or a clock to tell you. It's Miller time. Weather gets a little bit warmer. All of a sudden, the beer gets a little colder.
It's beer cracking season.
Okay. I don't know if it says that on the calendar. It's a beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters the most. It's a light beer that tastes like beer. That's why I reach for a Miller Lite. And it's less filling, only 96 calories. They've been doing this since 1975. They have perfected it. You know, that summer afternoon, we're coming into that time of the year, be like, oh, man.
Crack one?
Yes, or two. Don't look at your watch. Don't look at the clock. Don't look at the calendar. You know. Miller Lite, the great taste, less filling, tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Patrick, or you can pretty much find it anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories, fewer carbs than premium regular beer. Miller Lite. Final hour on this Wednesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show, will take you to Los Angeles through the magic of radio and TV. If you're watching on Peacock, our streaming partner, thank you for downloading the app. Also, we'll talk to Brandel Chamblee as we get ready for the U.S. Open, available on NBC, USA, and Peacock starting tomorrow. I did like that Rory and Brooks Koepka are paired together. It will be a challenge.
Rear.
That golf course will be a great challenge. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address, dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DP Show. Congrats to the Vegas Golden Knights. After 6 long years, they finally won the Stanley Cup. Imagine if you're 8 years of age and, you know, yeah, most of my life I've been waiting for the Golden Knights to win, and they finally did it. You know that there's some kid in Boston who went through that period where the Red Sox and the Celtics and the Bruins, like, everybody was winning, and there was a window where you're like, if you went 2 years without winning a championship there, it's like, oh, my God, what a drought. You get spoiled growing up. Yeah, Marv.
Yeah, the Sox are like, get rid of Terry Francona. I was like, you guys are so ungrateful.
Final results of the poll question from hour two. Seton, what are we going with? Final hour here. By the way, it was on this date tonight that Michael Jordan had 45 points, including the game winner, as the Bulls beat the Jazz in the NBA Finals in 6 games. Bob Costas was on the call. Bob will join us coming up here momentarily.
We had up there better protest strategy, a quiet, empty stadium or a full, angry stadium. Right now we've got 54% of the votes say a quiet, empty stadium is a better way to protest.
We started the show, we christened the Golden Knights winning, but we also talked about the Bills situation because this isn't one of those, let's make up some drama here. It's June and we need some talking points here. We need some, you know, hot takes. Here's Josh Allen talking about his relationship with his star receiver, Stephon Diggs.
Internally, we're working on some things, not football related. But, you know, Steph, he's my guy. I love him. He's a brother of mine. You know, this does not work, what we're doing here, without him. You know, we wish he was in here today and was out there on the field with us, and that's not the case, but I've got his back no matter what.
The fact that it's not football related is what's concerning here, because you can figure out football. And something changed when Josh Allen got hurt his elbow, and the offense changed after the 9th game. But you get to the playoffs, and you had the altercation or incident on the sidelines where Josh Allen is looking at his tablet. Stephon Diggs is kind of calling him out there. But the fact that they didn't remedy this during the summer, I find that very, very surprising. And it is concerning. And that's what Sean McDermott, their head coach, had to say. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DP Show. Bob Costas, Hall of Fame broadcaster, was on the call 25 years ago tonight. We thought Michael Jordan's final shot. And Bob has said that that was not exactly a push-off by Michael Jordan. That's like a maitre d' showing you to your table. Bob, I've never been shown to my table by a maitre d' where I nearly fell over. So I'm gonna disagree with that description.
Yeah, but Dan, he wasn't falling because of the very light push. He was already stumbling because Michael had faked him out of his sneakers. That's kind of what happened. If that happens in the second quarter of a regular season game, nobody even disputes. No one turns and says, hey, wait, that was a push-off. Nothing. It's because of where it happened, who it happened to, one of the most iconic moments in the history of sports. Forget about the NBA. If Utah has a gripe, and they do in that game, there was no replay then. In the first half, Howard Eisley hit a three that was waved off as a shot clock violation, and we had it on NBC. It's out of his hands before the clock hits zero. So that's 3 points taken away from Utah. Later in the game, Ron Harper hits a two that did not beat the shot clock, and it was allowed. Now, that's a 5 point. That's a 5 point swing. Of course, when people say it's like, oh, well, if that guy wasn't thrown out trying to steal second base and the next guy homers, it would have been a two-run homer. That's not necessarily logical, because if the circumstances are different, maybe what happens subsequently plays out differently. But in a game that was that close, you take 5 points away from Utah, they have a case that maybe they could have played a game seven in Utah a few nights later.
And I also go back to the play that's forgotten, and it's equally as impressive as Jordan Steele and Karl Malone that led to the game-winning shot.
Yeah, he's being guarded by Rodman, and according to Michael's subsequent testimony, he came around from the side, and Malone never saw him. Michael left his guy along the baseline, and Malone is preoccupied with Rodman, and Michael comes from the other side and slaps it away.
Yeah, and then that led to, 5 seconds to go where he hits the jumper. As you guys were game planning, after he makes the steal, and then there's a timeout, I believe, and then what is being discussed by you guys in the anticipation? Because we've seen Steve Kerr hit a game-winning shot, John Paxson hit a game-winning shot. Is everybody in unison that this is going to be Michael Jordan taking the shot?
Yeah, pretty much, because when he stole a ball, he then has it, and no one else touched it. And when you think about it, what's surprising about that? Pippen's hobbling around with a bad back. He's Michael Jordan. He's going to take that shot. He didn't pass it to anybody. He had it the whole time. He took it out of the backcourt, into the frontcourt, made the shot over Russell. But when he makes the shot, there's 5.2 seconds left. So even though the Bulls are up by one, whatever you say, the possibility that this is a championship-winning shot, the possibility that it's the last shot Michael Jordan will ever take in his NBA career, which briefly turned out to be true until he came back with the Wizards for an encore, that's a possibility, but it's certainly not a certainty because there's still 5 seconds left, and Utah could score. And Stockton got a decent look. Harper was guarding him, as I remember. Had a hand in his face. He got a decent look, and as I remember, it hit the back iron, but it was kind of on target. So if that goes in, they play a game seven on Utah's home floor.
Take us back, and I apologize. I thought for some reason when Jordan made the steal that they would have called a timeout then. But
no,
you know,
no timeout.
Yeah, that's interesting strategy, but you know, strategy always helps when you have Michael Jordan. We're talking to Bob Costas, who was on the call. Let's go back to the flu game. What did you know prior to the game as, you know, Michael's condition and why he was in that condition?
You know, I didn't work the 97 playoffs. I had taken a hiatus courtesy of my good friend and patron, Dick Ebersol. So Marv's doing the game. And I think Hannah Storm's doing the pre and post. Of course, I watched every minute of it. And I find out later, and it's a big part of The Last Dance, you know, did he have the flu, or did he have food poisoning? And if you've ever had food poisoning, Dan, which I have had a couple of times, that's as bad as you can feel knowing for a fact that you will not die. You know?
Yeah.
So if it was food poisoning, I think it's even worse than if he had merely had, quote, the flu.
When you think of Jordan's career, it's almost like it grows. It's like Babe Ruth. It tends to grow.
Yep.
It, you know, metastasizes. They're just, what is it about that? Like Mickey Mantle's legacy. There's so many of these athletes where you may not remember them being as great as they were in the moment, but then as we kind of move farther and farther away, does LeBron get the benefit of this, do you think, the way Michael Jordan has?
No, not as much, through no fault of LeBron's. You can make a very strong statistical case for LeBron in a LeBron-Michael comparison. And LeBron, discounting centers, because I've always felt, we've talked about this before, they're in a separate category. How do you compare Wilt or Russell or Kareem or Olajuwon or a healthy Bill Walton or whomever? How do you or Shaq, how do you compare them to forwards and guards? But LeBron never comes out these days any worse than number two behind Jordan in that comparison. But what LeBron does not have is as many iconic moments that are replayed almost on a loop and are in everyone's imagination, including those who didn't see it firsthand, going all the way back to the game-winning shot for North Carolina in 82 against Georgetown, and then being the centerpiece of the first Dream Team, and then all those postseason moments, most of them in the finals, but even the shot on Elo in an earlier round of the playoffs against the Cavaliers, so many of those moments, and the iconic commercials, Be Like Mike, and just thinking about the game we're talking about now, that is still the highest-rated game in NBA history, and the ratings for those games during the 80s and 90s on CBS, Bird, Magic, and then during the 80s on CBS, then in the 90s on NBC, the ratings for those games generally dwarf the ratings that NBA games get now, and many of those NBA games are on cable rather than over-the-air broadcast television. And that will diminish, not objectively, but in terms of the public imagination, that doesn't just diminish LeBron in comparison to Jordan or Bird or Magic, it will diminish Nikola Jokic. It will diminish Jimmy Butler or whomever you want to name through no fault of their own.
It's like Michael is Neil Armstrong. He's the first on the moon. And everybody else may land there, but Mike was the first there to plant the flag. Bob will be doing an hour-long interview with Albert Pujols later today for MLB Network and airs to be determined there. A couple of baseball questions. We're well into the pitch clock. How do you feel?
I think in general, all the changes have been tremendously successful. I've had a few players and managers tell me that they think 15 seconds with no one on base is a little quick, and they'd prefer a uniform 20 seconds, nobody on and with men on base, a uniform 20 seconds. But I haven't heard anybody dispute the general idea that the pitch clock, banning shifts, the two pickoff throws per at-bat, which lets a base runner be a bit more adventurous. It's nearly unanimous that this is not just okay, but it's a rousing success.
The A's moving to Vegas. Does Vegas take the A's out of the Oakland? They're taking the A's out of Oakland, but do they take the nickname?
Well, if they keep the nickname, then the A's become the first team in MLB history to have the same name in four different locations. Breaking a tie they had with the Braves. The Braves and the A's are the only ones with three. The Braves were in Boston, in Milwaukee, and now for a long time in Atlanta. And the A's were in Philadelphia, Kansas City, Oakland, and now perhaps in Vegas. But last night, I'm sure you saw this, Dan, and maybe you mentioned it earlier this morning, the A's had a reverse boycott night or whatever they were calling
protest.
It last night. The fans came out, and the idea was, let's fill the stadium or at least have much larger crowds than we've generally been drawing to show that there's support there if we had reason to have faith in the team. And then throughout the game, they're chanting, sell the team. Meanwhile, this team that was threatening the worst record of all time for a season, like making the 62 Mets look like a juggernaut, now they've won seven straight, so go figure.
And the Angels are still in the playoff race, which means as we get closer to the trade deadline, if you're tempted to trade Shohei Ohtani, it makes it even harder because you're in the playoff race. What do you think happens with Ohtani?
I don't think they trade him. And if they were to trade him, it would make the haul that the Nats got for sending Juan Soto to San Diego look like a pittance. I mean, you'd have to empty your entire farm system, all your top prospects, plus throw in some players that can be useful right now. I don't see that happening. Plus, there's only a handful of teams that are realistically in the mix if he decides to leave the Angels and sign with some other team as a free agent. So why would those teams want to empty their farm system if the real test is going to come as to how much money they're willing to pay him on a 10-year deal or whatever it is to sign a contract with him. And some team that has no chance to sign him beyond that time, I don't think is going to roll the dice and pay the price it would take for a midseason trade just to have a shot at a second or third wild card spot. Just doesn't seem to add up.
Great to talk to you as always, Bob. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
That's Bob Costas, Hall of Fame broadcaster, working for MLB Network, and was the play-by-play voice of the NBA on NBC from 1997 through 1999, 2000 season. And I thought when Jordan made the steal that there was a timeout and Phil Jackson let him go in transition, and then he hits the jumper there. I thought it was his last shot because, as I've mentioned this before, Jordan would always say through their PR person with the Bulls, hey, I'll talk to you when we win the championship. So we were guaranteed Mike was going to come on SportsCenter, and I was there to do the interview. He said, when we win the championship, I'll come in. Now, sometimes in other series, other finals, he did come in, maybe after a big game. We would always request him and Phil Jackson. But Michael comes in, and he's got his shoes off. He's got a Cuban cigar, and he's got the basketball's jersey is out. And he comes in. And I think that's the last time that we're going to see him as a basketball player. So much so, when he left the room, as he left, I go, it's a shame you're retiring because I'd love to have a piece of you. And he turns, and it's as if the game is still going on. God, I'll never forget this. He turns. He goes, what'd you say? I said, I'd love a piece of you, like to play you one-on-one. I mean, I'm just joking. We're during a commercial break. And Phil Jackson sitting there. He goes, stand up. So I have my suit and tie on. I put the microphone down. Phil Jackson's there waiting for us to come back from commercial break. How the bleep would you guard me? So I got my suit and tie on. He's covered in champagne. And I put my forearm in his back. And he just tore into me. He goes, I would bleep de bleep de bleep de bleep de bleep de bleep. And then he walked out the door. And then I go over and I sit down. And Phil Jackson there, and he's looking at me, goes, see what I dealt with? And I was like, oh, my God. We come out of commercial break, and Phil Jackson joining us now. Meanwhile, Mike left a lasting imprint on me that, man, you turn it on, boom, it's off. We just won. I think his career is over. And I'm just in a passing comment. Stand up. And I went, uh-oh. How the bleep would you guard me? Put a forearm right here in your
body. Oh, it's like this? I think.
Yes, Marv.
Did you think to yourself, wow, this guy's a psycho?
No, but I understood it. I don't think he was going to suffer fools like, oh, yeah, maybe you could have gotten your shot off against me or something like that. But I was just kind of joking because I didn't know if that was his last game. But it was my way of asking that by saying, yeah, it's a shame. You're going to retire. I'd like a piece of you. What? Stand up. How would you bleep and guard me? And I did the forearm bar. Yes, Mark.
He was retired. A Chicago Bulls rookie was talking, smack about him. He came to the practice facility and played him one-on-one. There's a video of it on YouTube.
Yeah,
and he's like, look at all these banners around you.
I know.
It's because of me. I was like, this dude's sitting on a golf course and comes back and plays one-on-one pickup with some unknown rookie.
I would like to, do a shooting contest with Michael.
And Bad Larry.
Yeah. Well, Bad Larry, our gambling podcast, said that he could take Michael Jordan if they shot foul line jumpers for $1,000 for each shot. Bad Larry said he'd beat Michael Jordan. He goes, yeah, he wasn't that good a shooter. I said, he was guarded by some of the greatest athletes on the planet, and he shot 49% and 83 from the line. Like, what are you talking about, Ben? But I would like to, a shot at Mike. Todd, would you see if Michael Jordan, he didn't even have to do an interview.
Fair.
I'll just meet him someplace, and we'll shoot jumpers.
Reasonable request.
Foul line jumpers. And how about $1,000? We'll shoot 15 of them. Yeah, Paul.
Want to play a quick game? Do we even get a response to this email?
No, we don't.
Not even a Todd. No.
No. But no, you know what? You can't do it because I don't think they have a sense of humor when we do these things with Michael Jordan, his people.
We don't want to hurt our chances of getting on the show. You don't want to do that at this juncture.
Yeah. Yeah. We have no shot to get no, low shot to get him. Not no shot. Yes, Paul.
I do have something for you on the Michael Jordan situation.
What do you mean?
I think I mentioned this to you, but I'll save it.
Okay. Until after the commercial break?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it good enough to tease the audience that...
No, probably
not. Oh, it's not. Okay.
It's decent, though.
Randall Chamblee will join us. It'll be interesting to hear his thoughts when he first heard the announcement that the merger was taking place, given his comments about the LIV Tour. And we'll talk about just how challenging this U.S. Open is going to be. We're back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, this is Tom Verducci from Fox Sports, MLB Network, and Sports Illustrated.
And I'm Joe Madden, and we're going to be around to talk a little bit about managerial decisions and what may have occurred in the dugout, maybe in the 1980s.
It's the Book of Joe podcast. I can't wait for this, Joe. We're going to dive into what goes on in the dugout and behind the scenes in Major League Baseball.
Cars, wine, whatever else we want to talk about.
Yeah, well, there are no boundaries, right? Listen to the Book of Joe podcast on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go. All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know what I mean? Even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports, like a lot. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my live sports and docs in one app, like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. All in one app with one password. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Golf's biggest stars head out to Hollywood. They're already there. LACC capture the sport's third major championship. U.S. Open starts tomorrow, NBC, USA, and Peacock. Before we get to Randall Chamblee, Paulie said that we had an update on Michael Jordan.
Kind of. I didn't mention this about 3 years ago. So one of the things we've always wanted to have Michael Jordan do a sit-down on this show, a good half hour.
Yeah.
Whatever. You've always said that's it. That's the big one.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. So remember it was about 3 years ago when the Jordan documentary came out, right?
Okay.
And we know the guy who directed it and put it all together. And there was this little event wrapping it up, and I did a little Popeye, and I met a few people that were deep inner circle people with Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Like inner circle.
Okay.
People that approved things in the documentary.
Okay.
Gatekeepers to all things Michael Jordan. Okay. I was talking to one of these people, and I conveyed to them, I go, hey, so one of the things we'd always wanted to do, and it was a calm conversation. It was a nice conversation, and I just dropped it in. We'd love to have Michael do a hangout, sit down at some point.
Yeah.
And the person goes, that was the response.
Oh, okay.
Which is rarely good when you ask for
something. Yeah, yeah.
And I said, well, I go, you know, I'm not talking tomorrow. I'm saying before the show is over. I said, you know, between you and I, before Dan retires, let's get this done. It was more like, hey, let's do this.
Okay.
And the person looked at me and they said, and this person goes, is Dan retiring? Like, is Dan retiring in the near future?
I go, it meant that we could get Michael, then I'd retire.
You'd
right
announce
now.
It.
Yeah.
You'd announce it.
Yeah.
I said, no. But I go, I will give you like a good 6 months heads up.
Okay.
And she goes, give me a heads up.
Okay.
And I would say it went from 5% to 30%.
So it wasn't a no chance. It was a low chance.
I think it, yeah.
Now
I think
there's a possibility.
Yeah, I'd say 30%.
Okay.
Possibly 30%.
All right, so you're saying we got a shot.
Yeah, back to you.
Brando Chambly, Golf Channel lead studio analyst. He's out of the studio, and he's at LACC, one of my favorite golf courses, the North, of course. He joins us now on the program. Brando, what would you shoot if you played LACC?
From the tips?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd probably have a hard time breaking 80.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of golfers that are going to have a hard time trying to break 80. I think that's a tough golf course, but this is what the U.S. Open wants. Is that correct, that par is going to be your friend?
Yeah, it's a spectacular design, Dan, if you've played it. You know, it's all the buzz. You know, this is a town that likes a good nip and tuck, and this golf course has had a nip and tuck, so to speak. It's had a, in the golf architecture world, a far and wide lauded nip and tuck, and it's architectural eye candy. But I think it's going to play spectacularly for the players. Big, wide fairways for the most part. But if you miss the fairways, you're going to pay a tough price. But it's the green complexes that are just out of this world. If this golf course were on the ocean, it'd probably be ranked, if not the best golf course in the world, right there behind Pine Valley.
Yeah, I agree. I've played it a few times, and I'm just playing from the member tees, and it's challenging. But I told the audience, you'll be surprised that the rolling hills, like, you're not getting flat lies there, that it's got far more undulation than you would expect at a golf course out there.
That's true. I mean, people whose job it is to dwell on architecture and so forth say that this is probably the best parkland site imaginable for an architect. And, you know, obviously this was 100 or so years ago. It's Gil Hance's line. Gil Hance said that this golf course, I believe it's, you know, he's paraphrasing a little bit, but I think he said this was the finest architecture that he's ever seen. And he's seen more than his share.
And then you start to figure out who's a favorite at an event like this. I know that Scottie Scheffler, DraftKings has him as the favorite, then John Rahm, and then Rory and Brooks are thrown in there, and Patrick Cantlay. What do you think of that lineup there?
I think DraftKings nailed it. You know, like you always look at the best players, but when you get to a venue like this where the fairways are so wide and there's ample room to just air it out for the best drivers and the longest hitters in the game. But then there's this really high demand for precision coming into these greens. I mean, they're small targets. They're angled. There's a big price to pay if you miss them. And Scottie Scheffler right now he's almost as far just in terms of ball striking. The distance between him and everybody else is almost Tiger 2000 and everybody else in terms of ball striking. So Scheffler leads, you know, strokes gained off the tee, leads strokes gained approach. You know, he has more greens than anybody. You know, at the Memorial, it was the second best performance ever, strokes gained tee to green. And he didn't win because he's just, well, he's putting like you and me probably. If he just putts decent, he should win this event. He could win it going away.
We're talking to Brando Chambly, and you can have the coverage, the U.S. Open. It'll be from Los Angeles, LACC. It'll be on NBC. Also, the wrap-up show, that is a wonderful show that Brando's there with Rich Lerner and company. That's after every round. You can see it nightly. The drama from last week, the fallout, and you've had time to soak this in. How has that time period helped or hurt your thoughts on this merger with LIV and PGA Tour?
Well, I'm sure like everybody that heard this, they thought they were being punked. I did, for sure. But now that I've had some time to talk to the people that were really close to this deal, you know, I said the other night that probably the second worst thing that could happen to golf is if this deal went through, and probably the worst thing that could happen to golf is if it didn't go through. The plight of the PGA Tour was such that, you know, they were hemorrhaging money in legal fees and also in trying to sustain these purses to compete with Liv, to keep players from being poached and going over to Liv. They weren't supported by the ratings. The ratings are fine in golf. Golf's in a great spot, but they don't justify $25 million purses. And the reward expectations of the tour players have been reset, I should say, to unsustainable levels. So when you look at the economics and you look at the fact that Liv was not going to go anywhere, the Saudis weren't going to go anywhere, it seems, you know, more understandable that the deal was made. But there's still this impression that the tour sold the professional game to the Saudis. And that is the pervading impression in all of golf right now.
Do you believe that?
Well, when you dig into the details, not the actual PGA Tour, as we know it, this investment arm that they've created, this new entity that's yet to have any specific goals. And look, the Saudis came into the European Tour as just a tournament. And the next thing you know, they wanted to run everything. And so now they're in the room as the majority investor. I think it's pretty easy to look down the line and think that they could exercise undue influence in the game of golf. And when you consider that there were other economic solutions, no doubt I know of the economic solutions. I've talked to people that have offered the PGA Tour some money, and everybody gets enamored with this PIF, this PIF fund for having $650 billion. And they're quick to say that they have all the money in the world. But, you know, I've talked to a lot of financial people in the last week, and they laugh at that. They're like, there is $140 trillion of good, clean, somewhat honest money all around the globe. And a lot of it is very interested in aligning themselves with the PGA Tour. So there are other good, clean economic solutions that the PGA Tour could have considered. And if the deal doesn't go through, I'd say it's back on the table. And I think that would be far more amenable to the golf public. And to the tour players.
I've tried to approach this as just a golf fan, that I don't think they had altruistic motives starting the LIV Tour. And Greg Norman, he had a vendetta against the PGA Tour. So I was disappointed. You can take the money. I don't care. Go take the money. But I only cared about watching golf. I wanted to see the best players. And I'm wondering what the game is going to be like in 3 years from now.
Well, if the deal goes through, it's likely that LIV will be dissolved, and the players that had played on LIV will have to sort of work their way back into the PGA Tour. They'll have to pay a fine, a substantial fine, no doubt, but it'd be great to have Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson back. It'd be great to have Phil Mickelson back. These are interesting players. They were poached for a reason. They had tremendous appeal. But if the deal doesn't go through, Dan, then your guess is almost as good as mine, because if the deal doesn't go through, innumerable things could happen, a lot of them bad. Players that felt betrayed could jump ship, yeah, go to LIV, give them more leverage. It could go that way. It could go the way that I sort of hinted at a minute ago. All of this economic investment, these economic solutions that by and large is, let's say, just a lot cleaner than the Saudi money, could come into the game and stave off those potential defections. But if it doesn't go through, your guess is as good as mine.
Have you crossed paths with Brooks Koepka? He had the line soon as it came out, welfare check on Chamblee. Phil Mickelson has had some problems with you. Do you cross paths with these guys at the U.S. Open?
I walked the course a couple of days ago right behind Phil all day long. I'd asked him to come up on the set. He wanted to come up on the set and debate and talk about LIV. I said, look, the seat's always welcome for you. Love to have you up. At least from my view, if maybe there was something I didn't know about LIV, he could come up because he's so invested in it. He could sell it, maybe make more money for everybody on those teams. I would be interested to hear the teams. He said, look, I don't want to help you guys make any money. I'm not coming up. So he offered a Pierce Morgan interview, which coincides with the U.S. Women's Open, which I'm working. So I had friends of mine reach out to him. I said, look, I'll sit down with you on a podcast anytime, anywhere, and talk about LIV all you want. But they're going to take their shots at me. The day they took their shots at me was, what was that? That was the Tuesday, the day it came out, which was ironic, really, because, you know, the next day in talking to the people that had a lot to do with this deal, like, if this deal goes through, LIV's going to die. Those guys could very easily just have lost their jobs, lost at least one third of their contract money, and have to then come back, and their boss would be whoever the commissioner of the PGA Tour is when Now, there was news yesterday that Jay's taken some time away to deal with some health issues, and we certainly wish him the best. But let's say Jay recuperates and is still at the helm. They have to come through Jay Monahan, who, you know, I'm not sure he's going to be too lenient in dishing out their fines to come back, because you could make the argument, I certainly make it, that they've harmed the PGA Tour in irreparable ways.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just like, how much can you fine Brooks Koepka if he wants to come back to the PGA Tour?
Well, it's been floated around. I think everybody pretty much knows what he left for. So take the taxes away, and there's your fine. You know, you can't irreparably damage the PGA Tour, benefit financially from it, be involved in legal issues along the way, which cost the PGA Tour loads of money, which otherwise would have been reinvested in the tour or pension funds or purses, and expect to come back and still have the upper hand financially with the people you're competing against.
But could you see Rory getting equity in the PGA Tour and John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler?
You know, that's the thing. Look, if this deal doesn't go through, and I was reading today just before I came on your show, CNBC was reporting that PGA Tour players are considering outside bankers to take a look at this deal. Any outside bankers or investment that may come into the PGA Tour, I would say, would be a heck of a lot more rational than the investment from the Saudi side. And the reward expectations, as I just said a little while ago, have been reset amongst PGA Tour players to unsustainable levels. And to re-anchor those reward expectations to reality is going to be difficult to do. But any investor that comes in is not going to say, look, we you're not playing for $25 million purses unless the ratings support that. These people would understandably want a profit, whereas all that the Saudis wanted was to launder their reputation, which if the deal goes through and you have the head of the Saudi investment fund on the PGA Tour board, I would say job well done. You did it. You've laundered the reputation of a reprehensible, unconscionable regime.
Are you welcomed in Saudi Arabia?
I don't plan on going to Riyadh anytime
soon.
But
I'm just curious.
But look, I think, you know, this is not about the Saudi people. I have no doubt they're exactly like us. They're, you know, the vast majority of them want to have a job, want to have good health care, raise their kids, put food on the table and have a nice time in the evenings. I'm talking about the apocalyptically radical, leaders and in particular MBS, who, you know, his human rights record is not particularly good.
Play nice this week, okay?
I hope we'll have a controversy-free week.
No. You want controversy. You want that on the course. You want that, right?
Yeah, on the course. On the course, of course. But I wouldn't mind, you know, some nice quiet evenings, you know, where my phone's not on. My wife would appreciate that.
Maybe Mickelson just sneaks by one time and stomps by the set.
He's always welcome on the set.
I'm sure, you know, he is.
For all our conflicts, I quite enjoy the man's golf.
Great to talk to you, Brandel. Have fun. We'll be watching. That's Brandel Chamblee, Golf Channel lead analyst, and they'll be on coverage this entire weekend, nearly 20 hours of weekend coverage on NBC, and, of course, Golf Channel and the wrap-up shows. They have championship coverage Thursday and Friday from 4 to 6 Eastern. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.